Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, and welcome to my podcast. I shouldn't say this, but my name is Katie Leeson and I'm Managing Director of Social Chain UK. And this week I am joined by the fantastic Stephanie Sword Williams. Stephanie is the founder of Fuck Being Cumble, an online platform, event series and book that aims to change the world views of self-promotion. Their approach is to challenge traditional norms of personal development with culturally relevant content that empowers people to be unapologetically proud of their achievements. She's a TEDx speaker, been on Forbes 30 Under 30 list, started her own business, and has recently been voted in the Dot's 100 Rising Stars Inspiring Change for the second year in a row. In this episode, we talk about how we can get better at self-promotion, why it's not cool to be self-deprecating, how the fear of sounding stupid and wanting to fit in can actually lead to blending in, the reasons why not everyone needs a side hustle, and we hear from Stephanie all about her career and what prompted her to start the Fuck Being Humble movement. Thank you for joining the podcast today. I'm so excited to talk to you about your journey, but also what you're creating now and a little digging into a few of the topics that you're trying to encourage us all to be better at, because I think it's such an important thing, especially for the next generation of people that are coming through the workplace, and also reflecting back on my own career of what I should have done a little bit differently. So you've lived all over the world. You came from a financial family, didn't you, in Leeds? And you've worked in advertising for a number of years. And now you've got an amazing book, Fuck Being Cumble. Tell us a little bit more about your journey, please.
That's such a good summary. I mean, I sound a lot more exotic, I think, in that introduction than I actually am in person. But yeah, as you said, I worked in advertising for 7 years. I actually quit my job this time last year. It's been my 1 year anniversary of being self-employed, which has been an interesting journey through the pandemic. But yeah, I've always had a passion of storytelling that always came through during my university, my degree, the early jobs I took. Every opportunity I've ever gone for, feel like storytelling has always been at the focus of what I was trying to achieve or do, and particularly storytelling with a purpose, which when I realized I was working in advertising, constantly selling things to people that maybe they didn't need, or maybe I didn't love selling, I wanted to create something of my own that could create a legacy for me, but could also help people around the world change their behaviors. And that's definitely something I realized that when I wasn't getting that fulfillment in advertising, I realized actually what's stopping me from creating something of my own. And that's how Fuck Being Humble's originally born. There's loads of different reasons as to why I started the platform. But from a personal perspective, it was the realization that I had spent 7 years understanding how to tell brand stories. And it was potentially time to tell my own brand and create my own mission and goal that I wanted to lead and I wanted to champion throughout my life.
Nice. I've heard it so often. And I think, having worked in media and marketing for, gosh, I think it's 17 years I've done this year, everyone goes through that sort of existential crisis where you think, what am I doing? I'm just making rich people richer. That's my job. But I'm not making a difference in the world. So what you've done is actually taken that motivation and created it into something that to help people. So I want to know a little bit more about it. I've read that people questioned the business because of its name. So I want to know who questioned it and why they did.
So when I first started thinking about this as an idea, I played around with lots of different names, and I have always been massively influenced by like 90s R&B and hip hop. It's pretty much the only playlist I listen to. So I did think about calling it like Say My Name, like Destiny's Child, Say My Name, personal brand. And I floated loads of ideas around, and I landed on Fuck Being Humble because that to me was the insight that so many of us were held down by being too modest or being too humble. And I remember actually like the first critics were probably my immediate friendship group, and not in a horrible way, but just in a protective way, probably. They were trying to encourage me to think about, well, is everybody going to love it? What if it alienates some people? And I remember at the time thinking, well, if it alienates people, they're maybe not the right people, which was probably a bit brash, but it was more about the message and the emotion that I wanted to evoke in people, as opposed to intimidating them with a statement that felt really far removed from them. So I think initially it was my friends trying to say, keep an open mind. This may get a bit of backlash, which I am really grateful for them saying in the first instance. And then naturally, you know, as soon as something gets a bit of traction, a bit of attention, all of a sudden it also attracts all the trolls, all the online haters, particularly middle-aged men over probably around the age of 50, living in middle America, generally the types of people that troll women, but definitely me and my perspective on LinkedIn was the prime place and still is the prime place where I get unsolicited advice and unwelcomed feedback. But yeah, I think lots of people experience it. And I suppose for me, I got a lot of press quite quickly. That again, the perks of creating a challenger brand, but also the backlash is that with that, you are then open to loads of comments. You know, that famous saying, like, never read the comments on any press articles you ever. Obviously, I read all the comments. So, you know, it was a mixture of different people. I got slammed in the Financial Times, which I can now laugh about. But at the time, I was absolutely gutted. And I think why that was so painful was because they never actually contacted me. They never interviewed me, got my side of the story. They never attended my events. They never read the book. This reporter just literally wanted to use me as someone to justify her argument of why self-promoters aren't welcome in her inbox. So it was quite tough at the time, particularly, you know, when you're doing something, when it's your own, you just feel a lot more vulnerable to that. And every blow is personal. It's not like when you're working in advertising and it's on behalf of the client. This is your personal brand. And it was my brand that was getting trashed by that reporter, which was a shame. But I had to have a word for myself at that point, and I've really stuck true to this sort of mentality of, she wasn't my demographic, nor was the Financial Times. If she wasn't willing to give me a chance and listen to what I had to say, then how can I take something that she's saying about me so personally? And so it's been a variety. This is coming up to my third year of running Foot Being Humble. I finally feel like I've got the majority of people on the side, and it's much more about understanding the content and the thinking behind the business as opposed to just scrutinizing the name because of how provocative it is.
I think that's a great tip for anyone who's starting a business. Do you want to tell me a little bit about what the concept is and the content behind it and what's happened in the last 3 years?
Yeah, so originally what I did was I kept on going to networking events and to panel events, and I always make the joke, I kept on seeing very male, pale and stale panelists, which generally were, no offence to any men listening, but men over the age of 50, running big agencies, having hugely successful careers, usually white, and they're very often dominating industry panels. And I just felt like, as a northerner from Leeds originally, but, you know, moving down to London, I came down from Manchester, and I was really excited, and I was meeting loads of amazing creatives who were running two side hustles, or who'd already made the Forbes under 30 list, or, you know, all those amazing things that people were doing. But for some reason, they weren't getting put on panels and they weren't being spotlighted. And this is obviously quite a focused issue that I noticed, but it was definitely the thing that sparked my thinking of, why is there such amazing talent that I see on a day to day? Why are they not being spotlighted? Why are they not being celebrated? Why are they not being pushed to the front? Why is it constantly the same types of people? And at the same time, in my friendship groups, I always ended up being like the career agony aunt. I moved jobs 6 times in 7 years, every time out of my own choice, never because I was pushed. But in doing that meant I learned a lot about selling myself, interviewing, prepping, how to get people's attention. And also it was part of my day job in advertising. Like, that was a big part of what I had to do. And with my friends coming to me and asking for this support, how do I update my CV? How can I make my portfolio look good? It just felt like there was a very personal response in terms of my friends needing that support. But I was also seeing this gap where talent wasn't being properly represented. So that was my initial insight. How can I try and make that better. And at the same time, in my actual day job in advertising, I'd started running events for clients, and we were starting doing new business kind of lead generation events. I was really enjoying that side of things, but I knew it wasn't part of my everyday role and I would only get to do that sometimes. So I kind of combined all of this thinking and said, I would just love to create a networking event that wasn't shit. First of all, I would love for it not to be full of old men with suits. I'd love to change the narrative around what a networking event looks like. So that's why at my events, like Aperol Spritz sponsors it. I have a DJ playing 90s and noughties, R&B and hip hop. Like, and my presentations are filled with memes and funny content and images of Snoop Dogg and three different identities. You know, like, it is really about trying to break down what professional development looks like, what it previously has been. And I really don't think it's been challenged like ever, hence such a disruptive name and such an important message that I'm trying to communicate to people, is that professional development doesn't have to be boring. It can actually be a form of self-care. It can be really relatable. It can be taught to you by someone who is 28 years old. It can be peer-to-peer sharing. It doesn't have to be about hierarchy. It doesn't have to be about earning your stripes. And for me, I know I felt it in my career, and I know the reason for being humble lands so well with people is it's that feeling of being overlooked in your career. It's that feeling of going unnoticed, just feeling unappreciated, and what you can do to change that narrative, to take control over your personal career. And that comes in all different forms, from the types of content I create, whether that's events, whether it's my newsletter, my book. My Instagram is where I invest lots of time in sort of building my community online, speaking on other people's podcasts and other people's panel events, and wherever possible, just trying to share really useful, relevant information that can actually change your career, that you can implement. And that was always the focus for me, was I never get up and stand and talk about why my career has been successful, everything I've achieved. I make sure that that 60-minute workshop that I run is about how you can make your changes and how you can have a career that you want to have. So that was always my goal. I was like, how can we challenge what's already been done almost on every level when it comes to professional development?
Amazing. And what kind of impact have you seen from some of the workshops, the newsletters? Your social feed is amazing. I was talking to the guys about it this morning. The clever use of relevant memes in a social feed about business, I thought was very, very good. It was making me laugh a lot today.
Thank you. Yeah, I suppose that, I mean, there's loads of amazing case studies. Every time I do a webinar, I get so many people DMing me like, oh my God, that was so useful. Thank you so much. I've never been to a workshop like this before. And I'm happy to sort of toot my own horn and say that, because I do think it's really important that people find these spaces, this type of content that supports people. I think two case studies that really jump out to me was last year, as a result of the pandemic, obviously we saw so many people losing their jobs, so many people having to find new forms of work. So I started running a free CV workshop, which was getting between 800 and 1,000 people sign up each time. And I was doing it on a monthly basis. And the other thing is, I don't put any advertising behind Foot Being Humble. I never have. So all of this has been organic. And somebody messaged me after they attended that webinar to say, I updated my CV and 24 hours later, I got a job interview. And she was like, thank you so much. She didn't end up getting the job, and she actually said it wasn't the right role for her, but she saw an immediate change, which was amazing. And I think probably one of my favorite ones is I run a money workshop called Bitch Better Have My Money. And I had somebody get in touch. It was around May last year, so really right at the start of the pandemic, pretty much the time where everybody was freaking out. Lots of companies were cutting opportunities. She actually managed to get a new job during the pandemic. It was a higher title, and she got an 11K pay increase. And at the time, I charged £10 for the ticket for that event. So it was like a £10 investment ended up being an 11K pay increase for her moving forward. So yeah, it just, it's kind of, it's always amazing to get those messages and that feedback. You know, it helps me to validate that what I'm saying is really working, but also it just helps to show that everyday people can make really small changes to how they tell their personal story, to how they present themselves, how they project themselves in meetings or performance reviews or pitches, and actually see the results that they want, as opposed to it being like, oh, manifest this, or, you know, read this book and 200 pages later, you still don't know what you're trying to do, or you're even more confused than you started. So I think the webinars, well, originally they were events, but obviously during lockdown, they've had to be webinars. They've definitely been massively important to supporting people with that confidence whilst we haven't had that support and whilst we haven't had that stability in both society and the economy.
It must validate why you started it 3 years ago when you hear those case studies as well, just knowing that you're doing the right thing in the right place. I'm going to go into now self-promotion and delve deep into it and the reasons why we're not very good at it sometimes. So how would you define self-promotion?
I break it down in the most simplest format it can sort of be explained, is self just means I, and promotion is just an activity that supports an aim or a goal. That's it. It's really just as simple as that. It just means promoting something that you're trying to achieve. I always say it's storytelling. However you want to tell your personal story is entirely up to you. So to everyone sitting there going, I want to self-promote, but I don't want to sound arrogant. If you're not an arrogant person, you won't sound arrogant. It's really important to remember that you choose the way that you deliver that story, and only you can decide how that is seen and how that is heard, and the content that you put out about yourself is what people will know you for. But when you don't put content out about yourself, then it's really hard for people to discover you.
Nice. Why do you think we're so scared to embrace self-promotion?
I think because people don't think it's cool. To be really honest, I think people think it's cooler to be self-deprecating, particularly in the UK. It's something that I have to battle against on a daily basis, whether that be with my boyfriend, my friends, family, anyone that follows me on Instagram. Like, it's always that self-doubt piece. It's always that, what will other people think? If everybody started self-promoting tomorrow and it became a cool thing to do, there would be no issue. My job would be done. But generally, people think it is better to be modest and to be humble and to wait until everybody bows down at your feet. The problem being is when that doesn't happen, we end up feeling not good enough. So you either put yourself out there and you feel good about yourself and you attract people to you, or you sit and wait and hope that you get recognized. But if you ever don't get recognized, you'll just look back on your career and think, why didn't I just put myself out there? What if I'd have just done that? So I do really see, particularly in the creative industry, it's very much ingrained that you should wait until you are allowed to speak, or you need to earn your stripes. And that was definitely something I experienced firsthand when I was working, but also particularly for creatives, I noticed that a lot. But yeah, it's definitely a societal issue. It's definitely ingrained in our culture. It is a really hard thing to train people out of. I think the best way that I've managed to help people transform that perspective is by showing those case studies, by sharing those really relevant and sort of realistic examples that people can actually implement themselves.
My mindset on it has changed a lot since becoming a leader. I think because when I was first starting out in my career, I always thought my work will do the talking. They'll notice because I'm doing a good job. But the higher up you get, and as a leader, it's not that you don't want to pay attention to everyone's day to day and what they're achieving. It's just that you've got so much to do that you don't have time to notice every single person's achievements. So if I don't get told what everyone's achieving, I don't know about it. And it's not that I don't want to, it's the time as a leader to know about it. So if I'd have known that back then, I would have approached things very differently, I think. Do you think it's a women thing as well?
I mean, absolutely, we struggle with self-promotion more. And I get asked this question all the time, like, why is it? And we can't deny that there are still issues with women's rights and the way that women talk about their successes and the way that they get differently treated. I actually shared an image of me holding the first ever copy of my book, and I was really proud of it. And obviously it was, you know, probably the biggest thing I've ever done in my life. And somebody I used to work with messaged saying, how smug do you look in this picture? And I was really taken back, and I was like, oh, okay, that's not the response I expected from you, but it's that is the treatment that women get, whether it's a joke or not. The very fact that that was written in the first place, that wasn't something that just slipped out. That was a, you know, a pre-written response to an achievement of mine. And that was hard to take. That was definitely something that it felt a little bit like bursting my bubble, but it's something that women massively face. I think there's a lack of role models for women, meaning if you can't see it, it's hard to be it. But I think that lack of role models also means that men don't see it as well, and they do find it even more taboo or strange or uncommon that women are succeeding either at the same pace or actually ahead of them. Like, they struggle with that. And not all men, absolutely not all men. I've had some amazing advocates in my career, and a shout out to those people that have been. But I do think we can't ignore the fact that 20 years ago, we were still meant to be housewives. We weren't meant to be having this level of success. We weren't meant to be achieving. And I always think it's really interesting when people ask me, like, who do you find really inspirational in your career? And I just think, like, I know so many women that start side hustles, that are running communities, that have achieved incredible things. I'm not that surrounded by that many men doing amazing things. And I know it's a bit of a sweeping statement, but in my network, in my groups, I am so inspired by the work that women are doing. And I'm really proud to see so many people come forward and self-promote and do it. But it doesn't mean that it's an easy thing. I actually think women have to work harder in investing in self-development and professional development because of these barriers that we face. And that's undoubtedly why my audience has been predominantly female. It's not been that I've not made it inclusive to everyone, but I think it just resonates with women, that feeling of either not being good enough, imposter syndrome, self-doubt, being unappreciated. All those emotions that a lot of women have felt in their careers are the reason that we struggle with putting out why we are good at what we do.
It's so true. And it's that saying of you can't be what you can't see is the reason that I am more out there with my personal brand than probably that's comfortable sometimes, because I see the results of being outspoken and talking about topics and showing ways that a female MD can lead things successfully. But you're right, the feedback sometimes, it's just bizarre. It's just bizarre, and it can stop you. I think if I didn't see the positives in what I was doing and I just only saw the negatives, it would have stopped me in my tracks and I probably wouldn't have carried on. But knowing that you're making a difference to those people that are making their lives better, improving their careers, it's such a powerful thing, isn't it? And it helps you to carry on doing what you're doing. I want you to tell me what FOSS is, please.
So FOSS is a phrase that I coined, the fear of sounding stupid. And it's actually, it's in my self-promotion masterclass. It's the first talk I ever wrote. And it was something, I don't even know how I came up with it, but it's just that really common feeling that so many people feel that stops them from speaking up in a meeting and saying that they're proud of something, or that stops you if you meet your icon at a networking event and you're like, oh my gosh, I really want to go speak to them and tell them what a fan I am, or tell them the stuff I've been doing, but I couldn't possibly do it. And what I sort of explain to people is when we let FOSS, the fear of sounding stupid, overtake situations or opportunities, what we end up being is actually generic. And we are so keen to fit in that actually we kind of blend in and we don't then stand out. And we struggle to cut through the competition because we think it's better to blend in and we think it's better to follow everybody else, when actually we all know that the key to sort of standing out is to go the other way, is to change the way that you're thinking, is to look at things differently and share your stories in different ways. So yeah, I see FOSS all the time. Every time I do my webinar and I talk about it, everybody says, yep, felt it, feel it, always feel it. Every single day I feel it. And I think there comes a level of awareness with it. If you didn't feel it, then you maybe would be someone who's really arrogant and you'd be out there just screaming how great you are. So I think it's good in a way that we feel a level of concern, because it shows that we have awareness of other people's feelings and emotions and how we may come across. But what I'd hate to see is that it stops us from speaking when it's the most important time to speak.
You've talked quite a bit about emotional intelligence, and it's one of the chapters in your book about it being important when it comes to self-promotion. I'd like you to just to give some tips on how you can start to think about self-promotion for someone who's listening now and thinking, this is exactly what I want to do. Obviously, they can go and buy the book, which they should do, but just like a little teaser on how to begin it, incorporating some of the things that we've discussed already.
Emotional intelligence is something that will absolutely transform your career when you understand how to manage both your personal emotions and the emotions of others around you. You will see much better results. It's something I learned being a middleman working in advertising, having to look after clients but also having to look at after creative teams internally. And when you understand how important it is to manage things like anger, jealousy, comparison, your communication, and also understand how to manage it in other people and support them on their journey, you really will be able to self-promote in a way that doesn't come across as self-indulgent because you have that awareness. And I sort of give a good example in my webinars. One of my courses that I ran called Big Up Yourself to help people know how to big up themselves, I sort of talk about the three G's, which are being genuine, being gracious, and being a giver. So when it comes to self-promotion, I always say use the three G's as a framework. So be genuine, be really honest, be relatable, be vulnerable, be gracious, acknowledge people, the ones that helped you get where you are, thank those people that got you to that point. And also be gracious in the sense of like have awareness of how frequently you're talking about yourself and how frequently you are bigging yourself up. And then being a giver is about how you can inspire people, how you can educate people, how you can motivate action in other people. And for anybody that gets nervous about self-promotion, one of my biggest tips would be is absolutely, if you feel confident to share a post to say, I'm really proud of this achievement, look what I've done, hit send, you go for it. Well done. I am so happy that you feel comfortable to do that. Go for it. If you don't quite feel at that stage, a really good way to turn a self-promotion post into something that is both inspiring but useful is just by adding an action at the end. So say that you got a really great piece of client feedback and you want to share it. At the end of sharing that amazing testimonial you've had, you could always say, now over to you, try and go out there and get a testimonial for yourself, because it will really help build your confidence. It will really help you to validate your own success and remind you of all the great things you're doing when you feel down. So you can really simply change a self-promotion post from purely being about you, which is absolutely fine. And I'm really proud of the people that can do that. But if you're not there yet, adding an action or a call to action or some sort of piece of advice or a task that somebody else could use so that they could then better themselves is always going to be a great way to build relationships with people. I've read lots of behavioral psychology books in the past, and they say when you can create a space or an opportunity for someone to achieve something with you, whether that's in the workplace, whether that's at an event or on a podcast, because of something you shared or you've enabled them to do, they will emotionally always stay connected with you. They will always remember you as the person that helped them do that. So that's always a really good way to look at when you do feel that level of imposter syndrome or a little bit of self-doubt. How can you give added value to someone else? What's the takeaway they can have? Because people always listen to things more respectfully. They always respond in a better way when they can see how it can help them. And that's just because we're quite self-centered human beings and we want to know how we can further ourselves. As well as congratulating you, it would still be great to know all the amazing wisdom or advice you could share to help me in my journey. And I think particularly pandemic, post-pandemic, when everybody is feeling quite fragile still and people are still looking for that support and guidance and reassurance, now more than ever, self-promoting with an action or advice is a really beneficial thing to do to build your reputation, but to also build long-lasting relationships.
Nice, some amazing tips there. I'm going to talk a little bit about you now. I'm going to ask you a question because you're a self-proclaimed perfectionist, and I saw that you were very critical about your TED talk that you recorded, and I thought that was very brave and very open to admit to things that when they don't go as well as you'd hoped. What did that honesty and that level of honesty do for you, and has it changed your mindset on sharing things when they don't go as well, or were you doing that anyway and this was just a continuation of that? Because it felt like it was a moment when I was reading it.
Yeah, it's a really good example to talk about, actually. I can be a perfectionist, but I also have a it'll do, just get it done mindset. And I think that definitely comes from being an account director and having to manage things and get jobs done, delivered on time. A really good tip that I would give to anyone listening to get through that sort of perfectionism phase, then I'll go on to sort of talk about the TED Talk thing, is have a it will do phase. So a really good example is I was working on my website. I had to completely redo it, both my personal and the Foot Being Humble website. And of course, like everyone in the world, I want it to be all singing and all dancing. And I want everybody to come online and be like, this is the best online experience ever. But the reality is, one, I'm not a web designer. Two, that would probably take me 3 years to get that done. And I still probably wouldn't have done it as well as I wanted to do it. And all I said to myself was, I just need to get a it will do version to go live. And I can keep adding as I go on it. And every week I keep adding little bits to the website. But when you stop yourself from doing things because you're trying to get it perfect, you will literally never give yourself the permission to say that it's good enough. And I know that from my own experiences, but I know watching other people who are very close to me hold themselves back because they think they need to be at a certain level and a certain standard. And to give the TED Talk example, so anybody who knows me knows I'm really open. I've always wanted to be a TED speaker. And last summer, last September, I was given the opportunity to do a TEDx talk, which was an amazing, you know, step in the right direction. But I had 5 days to write the talk, record it. I hate pre-recorded content of myself. I never think I do a good job of it. It's so hard. Like, I'd much rather you threw me in front of a crowd of 10,000 people than I had to sit and record a video. I just can't do it. It's just not my...
So hard, isn't it? People don't see the hundreds of versions that you do before you actually get to the final one. It takes ages. I can sympathise with that.
It's awful. It's such a hard process. So, you know, and at the same time, I was so burnt out from managing my own sort of book launch. I was doing like 30 webinars in like 3 weeks. Like, I was really at burning out point. It was a really intense time, and you could see it in that video, and I could tell it wasn't me. I didn't feel natural. I didn't feel like I did my best shot. And actually, quite a funny part to it is, like, I was borrowing my friend's camera and I did that many takes, the battery cut out, and I actually had to just go with the final take that I'd taken because it wasn't working anymore. I just had to go with it, which in a way was good. That was a really good cutoff point for the perfectionist in me. But basically the video came out and I wasn't happy with it. And I think because I don't put a lot of public video content out of me speaking, it's something you experience when you come to my events or you come to my webinars. It's almost like that's what you get by opting in. I was really like mortified at the point of sharing it. And I was worried that people would judge me on that content alone. I was worried I didn't come across well. I didn't feel authentic. It didn't feel like me speaking. Even though I was really proud of the script, actually, I was really proud of what I'd written. Like, I gave myself goosebumps when I read it. Like, I was really proud of that. So I was proud of lots of elements. I was proud of the achievement. I just wasn't proud of the output. So when it came to sharing it, it took me like 2 or 3 months to get over that fear of sounding stupid, of putting myself out there. And instead of saying, hey, everyone, look at this TEDx talk, I'm so proud of me, I actually went the opposite and said, hey, everyone, I actually hate my TEDx talk, but it's important for me to share it with you. And I just opened up about how vulnerable I'd felt for the past 3 months. It almost hypocritical in a way, and ironic that I was telling people to self-promote and you don't have to be polished and perfect, but I couldn't share this thing that was so monumental in my life because I was so worried about how people may judge me for it. And actually, so many people reached out to me to say, like, thank you for opening this dialogue around this. I can't tell you how many times I felt this feeling. And it felt really natural. And that's what I meant about being genuine, is I could have gone out there and been like, look how proud I am. But that wasn't that feeling. And the message I actually said is, not everything we do will be the best version of ourselves because we're human. And we have to acknowledge some of the external barriers, e.g., you know, I had to record it all by myself. My battery went dead. And the internal barriers of, I'm not an expert in this. I've never had training in pre-recording content. I've never had training in public speaking. Like, all of these things that you become so critical of, very often you are your worst critic. Like, nobody ever treats you half the time as bad as you do yourself. And I'm really proud I shared that TEDx talk. And to this day, that, you know, that was nearly coming up to a year ago now, people are still messaging me about it. They still like the post. They still talk about it. And I think that's really where I try to show all sides of who I am. Very much the way I speak to you right now is how I would speak to you in person at a networking event. It's how I speak on stage when I'm sharing stories. It's making myself as real to people so that they feel like they can too do something similar. And I think that's where this comparison from a negative perspective, when we constantly compare ourselves online, socially, and every day, not even just online, just to anyone that we see, is like when we don't see the rough sides, when we don't see the unpolished versions, it's really hard for us to feel like it's attainable.
Yeah, it's nice. I find for me, being vulnerable on the stuff that I post online, like you say, has a better effect than some of the times that I'm just talking about general stuff where work might have gone well or something that we've done. People want to know that you are human, and then what they're seeing online of a successful person still does have those down days or the hard things, or they've made a mistake. And I'm not surprised that that was probably your best post. It leads me quite nicely on, actually, to my best post. So I did a post, I think it was November, all around the stopping of glamorising overworking. And what I meant by that was the hustle porn that you see when you're online. And I know you do topics and sessions around side hustle, and I wanted to delve into that a little bit, because I talk about stopping glamorizing burnout. What do you see the benefits of having a side hustle without burning yourself out or glamorizing it as well? Because I think it's a fine line. If you're showing that you've got a side hustle online because you're proud of it, how does it come across as not being that hustle porn that's then going to make other people feel like they're not achieving as much as they should be?
I have quite mixed feelings about the hustle porn debate, because I think it's entirely up to you how you feel about that topic. If you feel like you're not doing enough because of everyone else's hustle porn, then that's your thing that you need to address, versus me sharing my side hustle. And I think I say it from that perspective just because when I was working full-time in advertising, I started Foot Being Humble as a side hustle. And it has like transformed my life in so many different ways. I've become an author, a TEDx speaker, made the Forbes Under 30 list. I'm a founder. I work with international clients all over the world. There are so many incredible things that have happened as a result of me side hustling that I don't want to feel apologetic for. And I don't want to feel like I should hide that, or that I shouldn't show the grind that goes into doing that. So me sharing all of that hard work is not me saying, why aren't you doing it? It's me sharing what's gone into achieving that success. Exactly what we were just saying, of sharing the vulnerable sides. If I was just walking around going, oh my God, my life is so amazing, I have barely had to work in life and I've got all of these amazing opportunities, we'd hate those people. I think it's a really fine balance between absolutely oversharing to the point where it's like, if you're not hustling, you're not working hard. I hate that sort of stuff. Like, that's stupid. And of course, nobody should say that. But I do think it's also really important to be transparent about the fact that when I worked in advertising, I was working long hours. I was coming home till 7, 8 o'clock. And then I was jumping on my laptop whilst watching Love Island or whatever was on at the time from 8 o'clock till midnight, working on proposals or presentations or building a community. Like, that's not me telling anybody else they have to do that. That's my choice. That's what I want to do. But I do think it's important that we talk about what goes into side hustling before you even entertain the idea, because of course, so much hard work goes into it. So I think from that perspective of that feeling, I would sort of encourage people to ask themselves, why do you feel that emotion when you see somebody else working? And actually, you can't stop what other people share. You can only change how you respond to things. So maybe it's just that you need to unfollow those people. Maybe you need to put them on mute. Maybe you need to follow more people that don't have side hustles, so you feel like there's a balanced perspective. I don't know what it is that you need to do individually, but I think it is more focusing on yourself and why those emotions are triggered. And then I think from the perspective of not burning out, I mean, I'm awful at it. Like, I will work myself into the ground. So I kind of joke at the moment, I've got like one really intense month, which is this month, and I'll take the next month and I'll have a more chilled month. I'll lay low and not have as many talks, you know, and I, although it's probably not the best managing technique, it definitely is part of my process. But when I was working full time, I just had to say, look, if I'm exhausted tonight, maybe all I can do is follow people on Instagram that I think are really cool, that would help share but being humble. Or maybe tonight I'm just going to do 1 hour of emails and then put down my laptop. Or when I was writing my book, I was writing it alongside my day job, again, as well as running all the events and all the content and everything by myself. So every Saturday I wrote my book. I went to the Hoxton in Shoreditch and I sat there having lunch and I wrote the book 9 till 6. And that was the time. I didn't put pressure on myself to try and write a book after an 11-hour day. Like, that would be stupid and it wouldn't have been my best work. So I think you as an individual have to identify when your productivity levels are high and low. And I always say to people as well with a side hustle is, unless you have literally come up with a cure for cancer or you are a cure for the pandemic, your Instagram post tomorrow is not that important. And I'm not to take away any energy from people self-promoting, but when you realize that you're not saving lives and it's not that big a deal if you don't post until next week because you're on the brink of burnout, then you let yourself off so much more. And I think when I first started Being Humble, I was like, I'm going to do 5 posts a week. I'm going to do a blog a week. I'm going to do a newsletter at least every 2 weeks. That went out the window within the first 2 weeks of me launching the platform because it wasn't realistic. So I think, yeah, you just have to figure out what you think is achievable. And you only know that when you try it and when you experience it. But your side hustle is your side hustle. You get to choose what hours you work. You get to choose how much energy you put in. You get to choose who you collaborate with, who you do and don't give content to. You know, it's your passion for a reason. And I think the important thing with a side hustle is that there is a passion. I think to sort of answer your point, maybe in a very roundabout way, don't feel the need to start a side hustle because everybody's starting a side hustle. You only do that if you have a genuine passion or an interest for something, because it is the only thing that will motivate you to do it. Otherwise, you will just feel burnt out from your day job, burnt out from doing something you're not that interested in. And you'll actually like despise it. You'll feel quite like, why did I ever start this? So I think, you know, rather than worrying about should I be doing more, it's about what do you actually want to do, and is a side hustle the right solution for that? Because if it's not, then don't do it. I think that's what's important. I really do think it's not for the faint-hearted. It's not for people who just think, I fancy mixing things up, I fancy doing something a bit different. It's got to be driven by something you're interested in or something that can help you reach your individual goals.
I think it's important to note, because a side hustle can actually help with burnout a little bit, because if you're feeling burnout from something you're not passionate about and then you find your passion in something that you're doing outside of your day job, that can actually be a help rather than a hindrance. So for me, that post has gone round a couple of times now because it's been picked up in a number of places. And what I was trying to get out of it is the fact that you're made to feel guilty rather than, which is yourself, it's the way you take it. But it's also, I think it goes back to what you were saying before about being completely yourself online and being authentic. Whereas the ones that you see that are pushing this, I'm up at 5 and I'm working till midnight and you can see me when I'm doing my emails dead late at night, that's not authentic. That's not the true picture of what goes on in that person's life. And then the comparison piece then comes into it.
And also, you don't want that. Like, that to me isn't cool. So I suppose I shifted my mindset with that. Is I never used to look at people who work till midnight in the office as like, oh, I should be doing that. I'd be like, are you mental? We don't get paid for that. So I think it's more about going, when you look at that, is that the life you even want to lead? And I actually talk about it in the book about the comparison. So there's straight up envy. There is, why didn't that happen to me, envy? Well, I've done everything that I should have done. Why have they had that opportunity? And then there's this fantasy envy that I sort of describe as this idea that you think you want that life or you think you should be doing something just because you're seeing it, but you don't even want that. And I think that's with the whole burnout culture and the side hustle grind. It's like, if you don't want that life, then why are you even entertaining it with your thoughts? Like, skip that post and move on to someone that does inspire you. I think that's what I would encourage people to think about.
So true. The last question I've got before we go into the admission submission is, I think it'll be really useful to the listeners if you could talk about Bitch Better Have My Money, and if you've got some tips on how people can position themselves better when it comes for asking for better remuneration.
So it's one of the most popular talks that I've had with my communities, because I think we're just not taught how to ask for money. Like, it's such a taboo conversation. There are multiple tips that I would give. My top tip would be buy the book, because there's two chapters on knowing your worth, and then there's another chapter on how to get the money you want. But I think really importantly, do the self-reflection before you walk into the room. And I do not mean 2 hours before your performance review, which is what a lot of my friends do. If you're going into, whether you're negotiating a pitch or a salary as a freelancer, or you're doing it as a performance review, please allocate time 1 week in advance for you to reflect on everything you're proud of that you've done, of all the things that you've achieved. And when I say reflect, I mean reflect not just on, like, yes, I designed a good poster, but what did that poster do for the business? So whenever you are reflecting on your achievements, always ask yourself, what was the business value? What did the business gain from that success of yours? Just saying that you made people feel really motivated isn't always enough. So it's really about digging deep and asking, if it wasn't for that contribution that you did, what would happen to the business? Or why is that so important? What did you do differently to your fellow colleagues or peers to make that achievement so important? And why should the business care? So always do that why piece. And, you know, because when you don't do this, you don't give yourself credit before you walk into the room. So not only do you need to do the self-reflection bit, which can be really hard, and I know people struggle with that, once you've self-reflected, then you need to practice the money that you want to ask for. And that is not, again, something you do in the room for the first time. You need to find a friend, a colleague, a peer, a mentor, somebody you trust, that you could practice saying, I would like to have £50,000 as my salary increase, or I'd like you to pay me a day rate of £250. And practice it, because when you don't practice it, again, you undersell yourself, you over-ramble, you over-justify. There are so many bad things that I see that I've done. I've massively, and I always say, I never tell people to do things that I haven't done myself. Like, these are all things that I've done. So really practicing. And sometimes maybe you want to do it as a voice note. Practice saying the salary you want as a voice note, a bit of role play with yourself, so that you can hear how you sound when you're asking for it. That's a really big tip that I would give. And then I think, you know, naturally, when you're in the room, just make sure you control your body language, whether that's keeping eye contact, whether that's making sure that your arms aren't crossed, you don't have a resting bitch face if you don't like what you're hearing, all those different things, you know, really making sure that you are present in the room. And then I think the final thing, and we did touch upon it earlier, was like, if you want that money, you chase that money. Do not wait for your boss to do the follow-up, to recap on the notes. You make the notes in the meeting. You document everything that is said as word for word as possible, because our minds like to focus on the negatives instead of just the positives. I know I've done it after every performance review I've ever had. So make sure that you document everything that is said, all the pointers, ask the questions in that moment, in that meeting. Then you do the follow-up, you recap on the notes, ask your manager or whoever it is that's holding the purse strings, have I captured all the information from the meeting correctly? If not, feel free to add any comments and I can put this in. Then I'd like to plan out the next steps with you and put in diary reminders, you know, put in deadlines for yourself. Don't put your financial destiny in the hands of someone else. And again, I'm saying this from experience, whatever it was, I always got it when I handed my notice in. And I think that was this frustration that I expected businesses would pay me my worth, but the reality is they don't. And it's a really sad realization, but not all companies will pay you based on how great you are. And that is just a big life learning you have to figure out. And it's really important for you to take control. Don't wait around for other people to decide when that happens.
So the final bit, This podcast is called I Shouldn't Say This But, because on each episode I try and open up with honesty and talk about subjects that perhaps someone in my role as MD would usually avoid. So I've talked about all things from anxiety, I've talked about imposter syndrome, fear of failure, etc, etc. So would you mind, please, Steph, ending this episode with an admission of something that you probably shouldn't say, whether it's about your struggles you faced during your career, a secret about your lockdown experience, your own personal demons, or something that you're trying to overcome. So I'm going to pass over to you. I shouldn't say this, but.
I shouldn't say this, but I also really struggle with not feeling good enough. And I know I advocate for people to completely ignore that sentiment, but it's something that I felt like I have always had labels attached to me as to what I would and wouldn't achieve. And it's come from different people, different aspects of my life, different points in my life. And I actually had therapy for the first time last year. And it was in that session that I realized I was trying so hard to be seen as someone who was academic and serious and professional that I wasn't actually acknowledging what I'd achieved. But there was definitely probably something inside of me that feels like I'm trying to outlive labels I've received in my career. And it's a blessing and a curse. I think it's the thing that drives me. I just have to make sure that I give myself credit, like I tell everybody all over the world to do, and take those moments for reflection. And doing that is so important. And I think that's where I've been so busy pushing everyone else that I do forget to reflect on my own achievements. And it takes me to just secured an amazing brand partnership with a brand that I've been obsessed with for years to be like, shit, did that just happen? And I think trying to get better at daily reflections of just even a phone call that I had went really well today, or even, you know, feeling grateful for someone in my life or somebody who enabled an opportunity. Yeah, I think I probably need to reflect more and soak up the moments when I have done well, because I don't think I probably do that enough.
Brilliant. I think that was an amazing admission submission. Do you want to just tell everyone where they can find you, where they can find the book? Just give yourself a little shout out.
Sure, I like doing that. So you can add me on LinkedIn, Stephanie Sold-Williams. You can also follow FBeingHumbleLDN on Instagram and Twitter. Sign up to the newsletter. I often do discounts for people that are part of my newsletter database. You can also buy some of my talks online. Bitch But Have My Money is one of them, as well as Interviews Made Easy. And I've recently written a CV guide, which is a 15-page PDF on how to revamp your CV. So head to footbeinghumble.com/shop to grab some of those things. But yeah, just generally get in touch. Would love to hear from you. And if you ever want to collaborate, please do get in touch. And you can get the book in print and audio. So definitely grab a copy of the book.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. Loved that chat. And good luck with everything. I know you've got a busy month, so make sure you are getting those rest points in.
Thanks so much.
I've absolutely loved talking with Stephanie today. She's so right about so many things. Some of the key things I'm definitely going to take away from this chat are overcoming our fear of sounding stupid really means that we're daring to be different, and that is never a bad thing. The three G's being genuine, gracious, and a giver, and how we can use these as our framework to talk about and promote ourselves when it comes to posting content online. To get over perfectionism, have an it will do phase. This was really interesting for me because I am definitely a perfectionist, but Stephanie helps us understand you can never do everything perfectly. You can work on things as you go. When you stop yourselves from doing things just because you're trying to make it perfect, you will never really give yourself permission to get it done. The final thing I want to take away is you can't change what other people are sharing online. But you can look at why those emotions are triggered if you're finding yourself comparing yourself with others. And then that's something you can look at working on. Next week, I'll be back with another episode all about setting boundaries. I look forward to speaking to you all then. See you next week.